Nashville Sports Radio.
Welcome back, Johnny Ballpark Franks with you. This is a way to wrap up the week. Just a reminder, coming up tomorrow at 4:20, Bobby Bowden, the legend himself, will be a part of the show. Longtime friend as well. And speaking of longtime friends, our next guest, Brad Nessler, the play-by-play voice of the SEC on CBS. The fact, Brad, we are now talking about, we're 9 days away from the start of the college season, SEC style. Back when we visited in April and May, I didn't necessarily think we could also, maybe even say those words.
I remember we were talking about Johnny, and we said, hopefully the next time we talk, we're talking about football instead of the possibility of football. So it's pretty special, because the last 6 months we've been through for everybody has been the total doldrums. And if football can help people a little bit, it would be nice if we get back to business.
How has it been for you, along with Gary Danielson, your married partner on television, along with Jamie Erdahl? What's it been like for you from a preparation standpoint this year compared to other years?
Well, to be honest with you, excuse me, I'm going to turn that off. My friend potential spams on my other phone. actually, we're supposed to be at West Point tonight to get ready for BYU and Army. So from the standpoint of preparing for a game and then having it taken away from you because BYU had too many outbreaks of COVID, just that alone tells you what the preparation has been like for us, I guess. From the standpoint of the whole season, I think we were just praying that we were going to have football, and then we got around to the point where we're supposed to have game one this week and then get ready for SEC next week. And maybe that's the way it's going to be. Maybe that's the reality of the whole season, that we're going to get a couple weeks in, that we're going to have a game where it either gets canceled or we have a replacement game, whatever the case might be. So, that was the reality for us immediately last week. You watch two Army games, you do your preparation, you do a lot of homework on BYU, and then you get a call from programming, and they say BYU can't play Army because they've got too many cases of COVID. So that's the way it's going to be, I think, for all of us for the rest of the year, probably.
First game next Saturday on the 26th, Mississippi State at LSU. It's strange hearing Ed Orgeron earlier this week talk about the fact that most of his players at one point or another have tested positive to COVID-19, and he hopes that that's the only time and doesn't have to worry about it anymore. When you heard those words, what did you think?
I guess my first reaction was that's Ed. He's pretty much you talk about transparent. He's a gigantic piece of cellophane, and I don't think his AD and AD and president were too happy that he put it that way. But I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and they were just having a problem with the offensive line at that point, that it wouldn't have been great trying to protect his quarterback or open holes for his running back because they had a lot of holes in their offensive line. So I knew at that point that they'd been through at least that position. And earlier, he had said that they're were, several cases. So when you add it all up, you kind of go, well, he's probably right. It's probably half the team or most of the team or whatever. And when he talked to us, Gary and I, he said, I think everybody's going to get it eventually. So, that's Ed just being Ed and being honest. And I think, to be politically correct, his bosses probably wish he wouldn't have put it that way. But I think that's the truth. And he just shot straight about it.
One of the things, too, with this schedule, the way it's set up with, all conference games for the SEC, the big part is, when do you get the opponents and who plays, who do you play before, who you play afterwards? And that's why I think it's going to be really a bizarre thing. I mean, it's bizarre enough as it is, but then watching this sprint to an SEC championship, it's certainly some teams are at a disadvantage compared to other teams, but hey, if this is a strange year anyway, and it right. is what it is.
Yeah, you look at Texas A&M, and I think their fans back when the schedule came out for this year were looking at it going, we're going to be, we could be 9-0 or 10-0 or whatever, and then the schedule gets changed to all conference games, and they get Tennessee and Florida added to the mix, and they've already got Alabama and everybody else. And all of a sudden, their 10-game schedule looks like, whoa, if you go anywhere near undefeated, you're a really good team. So, I think it changed the opinion of a lot of fans when they looked at their team schedule and then looked at the schedule when it was rearranged. I think it was, I think if you look at it, and I don't think the SEC did this on purpose, but I think if you look at like week one, it looks like it's supposed to be a warm-up week for the really good teams, you know, the Alabamas and the Georgias, okay? You know, play these guys, play Arkansas, whatever, and play Missouri, who's got a whole bunch of players are out right now, I guess, and then, you know, get warmed up for when you hit October and when the games get really big. So, you know, it changed a lot when the schedule changed to all conference games, and when they rearranged things, it changed the outlook, I think, for a lot of people.
You know, you brought up Arkansas, and it's certainly a program, if you're a fan of that program, you're waiting for, you know, that program to enjoy its heyday again. And you look at their schedule this year, when we got the preseason top 25, I mean, we're talking about 7 of the 10 teams in the preseason top 25. This is when they were including everybody, even, yeah, like the Big Ten as well, along with the Pac-12. They've got 7 of their 10 opponents all ranked in the preseason top 25.
Yeah, Coach Pittman probably said, you know, I wanted to be a head coach. Wait a minute. Can I go back? Just be an offensive line coach, one of the best in the business. I think I want to change my mind. It's going to be really tough for them. And, you know, that's been a program that, you know, I thought that Brett Bielema had it going in the right direction until he had a bunch of injuries and it just changed everything. And it's been, you know, kind of just a roller coaster ever since, trying to find the right guy in the right spot and the right coach and the right players and the right recruits. And it's been tough.
Hey, one of the things, too, and I'm sure you and Gary will get into it in conversation as far as next week, but with Mississippi State and LSU, I mean, think about the personalities of those two head coaches. Mike Leach, first year as head coach of Mississippi State, and we know what Ed Orgeron brings to the table.
It's going to be so much fun. The problem we have now, Johnny, is that everything we are going to do this year is pretty much going to be on a Zoom situation, you know, and really a lot of the best things, I guess, we get, you know, like you've asked me before, do you get anything out of coaches' meetings? And I've always told you, strategy-wise, no, they don't tell you anything. They might tell you who's going to play and who's not going to play, if you're lucky. But you get some of those side conversations going, and it just adds color to the broadcast and all that type of thing. And I'm going to miss that because, you know, sitting down on a couch next to Ed and talking about what his neighbor came over and brought him, brought a mistake over one night or whatever, that kind of stuff. You get into those conversations, and all of a sudden, little sidetrack conversations that end up being a great part of the broadcast. Now it's going to be just kind of football, 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 because you're looking at a screen, and, you know, he doesn't know who else is on there. You know, we know it's just the producer, director, Jamie, Gary, and I, but it's not going to be the same, not doing it in person. We'll never get the same kind of thing out of the kids when we're talking to the players, because they get comfortable. After a while, if you're sitting in a meeting room or if you have lunch with them, that type of thing, they loosen up a little bit. It's just going to be different. I'm really going to miss Leach because the last time I did a game of his, and I don't know if it was a Texas Tech or Washington State, but you go in his office, and he's got all the pirate garb everywhere, you know, and you just start asking questions, and he goes bananas. And, you know, he'll still go crazy on the Zoom a little bit, but it's not going to be as fun because we're not going to be in person for most of those things.
You know, one of the things, and we were talking about this last week as far as going into week one of the NFL, we don't know what we're going to get early as far as college football, for example. I mean, I go back to that Monday night game between BYU and Navy. Yeah. I pick 'em game, if you look at it from a spread standpoint. That final score, when you get beat by 7 touchdowns and when it was a pick 'em, then yeah, Something's not right. And you wonder early on if we're going to get similar kind of things because a lot of these programs, Missouri, Tennessee, Auburn, starters have lost valuable practice time due to having to sit out because of COVID-19, et cetera, and other reasons as well. It makes you wonder what we're going to get the first week coming up next Saturday.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just the lack of contact for the most part, you know, like it almost cost Georgia Tech their ball game against Florida State because Jeff Collins didn't want to do full drill special team field goal at extra points, and they had 3 kicks blocked because they never hit anybody, and he thought just standing in a stance to kick extra points and field goals was too close a contact, and so he just didn't do it. They didn't do live ones against ones on a kicking drill, and they had 3 kicks blocked. And so I think the tackling and that type of thing, you know, Coach Niumatalolo at Navy admitted that they didn't have any, you know, full contact drills. And it showed, man. They got out there, and I think in the second quarter, finally the defense started making some tackles, and they went, okay. By that time, it was too late. You know, BYU was so far ahead of them, and then you got men playing against young men anyway, because you got BYU, it's, they're 23 and to 25, half of them, and you got, you know, the young guys at Navy. So that was no contest, and I would never in a million years, nor have I ever, and I don't care to, I don't know how anybody bets on games right now, because you didn't have preseason in the NFL. You didn't have a lot of contact or a lot of prep time for colleges, at least not having your full complement of players because of so many guys being out due to COVID. You don't know what you're going to get, and I don't know what we're going to get next week. You know, I think LSU, if Ed says most of them had it and they're over it, we're going to get a full complement of LSU players, I guess. I don't know what we're going to get from Mississippi State, and it's crazy. It's just going to be like that all year long, I think.
I brought this up, you know, on Tuesday after watching Jerry Jeudy, the rookie out of Alabama. I can't recall him dropping passes like that, playing for Alabama, and the fact that there were, what, only 500 people in the stadium, it was almost like it was a practice where maybe your concentration is not there. If you're playing in stadiums where limited seating, limited fans, you wonder how certain players who are used to having huge crowds, how they are going to perform.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't think the Falcons would have been beating the Seahawks, for instance. I live in Atlanta. I don't think they would have beaten them anyway because they didn't play good enough or didn't play well enough. But nobody in the stadium is just bizarre. And, you know, there's certain teams that thrive on noise. I mean, you talk about Seattle, Minnesota, New Orleans, you know, places that have domes, Atlanta. When there's no crowd reaction, I don't care what you do. They say, well, we're professionals. We're making millions of dollars a year. We should be able to self-motivate ourselves. There's no doubt about that. But, man, when you don't have crowd noise and you don't have that impact and that fan base behind you, I think it's totally different. And I think it's going to be really weird for us. Now, LSU's going to have fans, but it's not going to be 100,000, and that'll help. And had I done the Army game this week, they would have had 4,300 cadets there, and that helps. But I don't look forward. I'm not even sure as I look ahead. I think there's going to be at least 20% in most of the games I'm doing. But I wouldn't want it to. If I can not do a game with no fans, I would prefer not to have it that way, because changes the way you broadcast the game, too. I mean, you've been around this business long enough to know that we feed off the crowd just like the players do, and it's a different deal.
Give me one team that you're most interested in seeing how they perform and seeing where they could possibly be in November going into that final week in December, as far as December 5th. For me, it's Kentucky, mainly it's because of that offensive line that Kentucky brings to the table. I think it's going to be a tough out for Auburn taking on Kentucky at home next Saturday, but then they get Ole Miss, Mississippi State, at Tennessee. They do get Georgia before they get to Missouri, and then they get a home game against Vanderbilt after an open week. I mean, it's a Kentucky team that could begin the year 6-1 going into those final three games. I'm really intrigued to see what can Kentucky do. Is there one team that stands out for you like that? I mean, other than, of course, the Alabama and Georgias of the world.
I think you got one of them. I was going to pick about three. I guess Florida. And I just thought that they've closed the gap enough that it's Georgia or Florida on that side. And yet I start thinking about Kentucky and Tennessee, and I go, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I just think that, you know, the Florida-Georgia game is going to be as big, if not bigger, than ever before, and it's going to be a little different date a week later. It won't be the world's largest outdoor social gathering, but it will be pretty big. And I don't know. I just think that Mullen's put it together there. I think they've got the personnel. I think they got the quarterback. And, you know, Georgia's got to get through Alabama first. If they lose that game and then they lose to Florida, I think they're out of it. They can work their way back into it, but I just don't think if you lose two games, it's going to look too good. You know, up until the Big Ten said they were going to play, I think most of the SEC thought, hey, we're going to have two teams in the playoff.
Right.
No matter if there's two losses, whatever, we'll get two in there, and Oklahoma will be in there, and we'll see what the other team is. And now the Big Ten coming back into the picture has changed all that. So, I don't know. I guess Florida, I kind of look at them as being, they're not a sleeper by any stretch of the imagination. I just think they're good enough to make some noise.
Brad, thank you as always. I hope that you have an incredible rest of the week. Stay safe. Give my best to Gary and the gang, and we certainly look forward to joining you and talking to you down the road.
You got it, Johnny. Check back in, brother. Always good to talk to you.
All right, my pleasure. That's Brad Nessler, the play-by-play voice of the SEC on CBS. If you're not doing so, you can keep up with Brad on Twitter at Brad_Nessler CBS. Still coming up around 5:20, Doug Segrist joins us out of Birmingham. He's a co-host on The Zone on
Westwood
ABC 3340.
Sports presents this special report on the 120th U.S. Open Golf Championship. Thomas Peters just recently returned to competition after his girlfriend gave birth to their first child. Peters, playing in his first major since the British Open last year, didn't look that rusty in this first round. Four under 66 has him one shot back.
I drove it really nicely and I had some really